Hammer of Sigmar. Dark, heavy clouds hung over the World's Edge mountains, hiding the Blackfyre Pass from sight and casting a gloomy grey light on the battlefield. The Empire forces had managed to find the Orc Horde and bring it to battle in a narrow gorge where the old dwarf road, descending from the pass, reached the rocky foothills. If the orcs were not stopped there, they would swarm through the plains of Averland. Kurt Hellborg, Reichsmarshal of the Empire, was observing the battlefield from a dominating crag, an expression of intense concern on his battle-scarred face.
"Can you see him?"
he asked the Master of the Engineers Guild, who was searching the tempestuous skies with the help of his telescope.
"Yes," answered the engineer. "He's heading back, but his griffin is flying in a rather peculiar fashion. I'm afraid it's been wounded."
Soon it was possible to recognize the shape of the mighty Deathclaw and its rider, the Emperor Karl Franz himself. The griffin was obviously in a bad condition, its flight painfully irregular. The two high officers and the Reichsguard knights, who were kept at the base of the crag in reserve, were momentarily ignoring the battle in the gorge below and following with apprehension that little dot in the sky. The knights were holding their breath, afraid for the safety of their lord. But the loyal beast, in spite of its serious wounds, eventually made it to the Reichsguard and was welcomed by a triumphal cry. Immediately, the Emperor was surrounded by his men. His first worry was to see that the griffin was taken straight back to Altdorf with one of the baggage wagons. And only then he accepted a flask of ale, mounted his warhorse, and spurred it towards the Reichsmarshal at the top of the crag. As Karl Franz dismounted, the two old officers first asked him about his griffin.
"How bad is Deathclaw, sire?"
"He will live, and I am confident he will fly again," Karl Franz reassured them. Then he noticed the amused expression that was appearing on the Reichsmarshal's face when his old friend realized that the Emperor was completely covered in green gore.
"What are you sneering at?" asked Karl Franz, smiling as he removed some of the slime from his own armor. "I know that giants are not very bright, but I assure you they have enough brains to bathe in. At least this one had. Now, what's the situation on the field?"
Kurt Hellborg turned serious again and replied,
"A stalemate, my lord. The orcs are trying to push their way out of the gorge, but our infantry is holding its ground. We are outnumbered at least 5-1, but as long as we keep them in the gorge, they cannot make their numbers count. Furthermore, they're so densely packed, they make a perfect target for our artillery, and the guns are causing tremendous casualties.
But they are orcs. Those things do not fear death. They will keep on coming," murmured the Emperor. Then he added,
"Don't you think that their attack is quite unusual?
Until now we have seen lots of goblins and not so many units of orc warriors. Only that giant presented a major threat. Where are their best troops, I wonder?"
"Perhaps up in the pass, storming the dwarf fort," proposed Hellborg. "Maybe the dwarf garrison still resists."
"Let's hope so, Kurt," answered Karl Franz. "But please, warn your knights that I may be forced to ask them to fight dismounted if the situation gets worse. The rough terrain of the gorge is not suited to cavalry.
They dislike fighting on foot, but they all swore to follow you to the far north if necessary. It shall be done as you command."
"Thank you, Kurt," nodded the Emperor, and then turned his attention back to the battle. From this distance, it was possible to tell the great difference between the fighting styles of the two races. The Empire battle line resembled a breakwater of steel, which an immense green tide was trying to submerge. Yelling ferocious battle cries, thousands of goblins and orcs poured down the pass. Large mobs of savage warriors crashed on the disciplined ranks of the Imperial infantry. The attackers were almost welcomed with a volley of handgun fire from a small detachment deployed between the main units of halberdiers and spearmen. The blaze and crackling noise of their shots accompanied the killing power of their bullets, and at times, especially with cowardly goblins, this was enough to disperse the savages. Orcs, on the other hand, were much more difficult to stop, and often their charges hit home. Then the men had to face some of the fiercest fighters in the old world. 1-1, a human soldier was no match for an orc warrior. Those monsters were sluggish, but they could continue to fight, even with a spear driven straight through their body.
Once again, the superior tactics of the men compensated for their lack of individual strength. The closed ranks of spearmen and swordsmen were taking the brunt of the charges and resisting long enough for halberd-armed detachments to hit the orcs in the flank, eventually routing them. The Empire artillery was dominating the battlefield. Its cannons destroyed the primitive stone throwers of the orcs with surgical precision, while the mortars and deadly volley guns of the engineering school opened huge gaps in the enemy ranks. Here and there, a blazing gout of fire or a blinding lightning bolt was discharged against the enemy, marking the point where a wizard had won his duel with the green-skinned shamans, whose unreliable magic was often as dangerous to their comrades as it was to the Empire troops. Up to that moment, the battle had hung in the balance. The soldiers of the Empire had repelled many charges, but more and more enemies were appearing from the winding road descending from the path. The orcs and the goblins seemed numberless, while after each attack, the ranks of men got thinner. The Empire had reserves, but they were mostly made up of hurriedly conscripted militia. Mercenary crossbowmen could barely replace the handgunners, and the rough fighters of the free companies lacked the slaying power of the perfectly trained state troops. The artillery, too, would eventually run out of ammunition, so the Empire army's only hope was that the morale of the orcs would break. The same feral instincts that made the orc army so devastating could also cause them to collapse irreparably if they were confronted with sufficient resistance. The battle continued for hours, and the orcs kept attacking fiercely. The Empire soldiers were tired, but their unbending discipline still held. After all, they knew that they were fighting to save the lives of their families, and their emperor was there, at their side. So they stubbornly kept on fighting. Even when entire regiments were overwhelmed by the Green Horde, the men of the Empire held their positions and fought on. Eventually, the effects of their stern resolve started to show, as gradually the Greenskins' charges seemed to lose momentum. Those brutes looked less confident now, as they had to scale the grisly piles of green bodies that were obstructing most of the gorge to continue their attack. The Emperor, from his dominating position on the crag, had noticed the reduction in enemy pressure. He was considering the idea of dismounting his bodyguard and leading it into the fray to deliver the final blow to the orcs, when something terrible happened. A clamour arose from the northeast, where a new force appeared from a wood lying not far from the Empire's left flank. Massive orcs mounted on brutal warboars were emerging from the cover of the trees and charging towards the panicking artillery. Worst of all, the boar riders were led by the hugest orc the Emperor had ever seen. The creature was a real monster, 8 feet tall and as broadly built as the ferocious beast he was riding. Swinging a massive battle axe over his head and bellowing a roaring battle cry at the head of the charging boar riders, he was the incarnation of the bloodthirsty spirit of his race. Surely, this was the warlord responsible for the creation of the Wah, a dire threat to the realms of men and dwarves of the old world. The orc cavalry ran down the artillery crews and smashed into the left flank of the Empire battle line. Entire regiments were caught while turning their formation to face the new threat and were easily routed and butchered. A few units broke rank and fled as panic started to spread through the Empire left flank. Nothing seemed to be able to stop the orc warlord. At the same time, the mobs of goblins on the road to the front of the Empire lines were swept aside by fresh troops who rushed forward as soon as they detected the cavalry attack. Those goblins who were not fast enough in getting out of the way were ruthlessly trampled by the newcomers. These were the best orc warriors, powerful veterans covered in scars. Bigger and stronger than the average orc, they formed an awesome fighting force. Beside them, small groups of monstrous trolls were pushed against the men, and one more giant appeared and joined the fray. "Sir," began the Reichsmarschall, a tone of despair in his voice. "I know, Kurt," Karl Franz interrupted him. "This explains why the Stirling contingent did not arrive. We underestimated the cunning of these barbaric warriors. It looks like our army has fallen into a colossal trap." "Sir, there is only one thing left to do. You must return to Altdorf. I would only ask you to give me a squadron of Reichsguard knights to engage the boar riders.
so that we may buy some time for the rest of the army to retreat.
Karl Franz looked puzzled at this proposal. He stood silent and turned to look in the direction of his capital. Yes, he could retreat to Altdorf, and from the safety of its walls raise another army. Then his eyes met the green fields of the Moot on the far horizon, and he considered what would be the fate of that merry land, and of all the people living in the eastern provinces of the Empire, if he followed Kurt's wise advice. A sardonic smile appeared for an instant on his lips, and when he turned towards the waiting Reichsmarschall, the decision was made.
"No," said the Emperor firmly, "not while I live. Kurt, you will return to Altdorf with a small squadron and organize the defenses in case we fail. My place is here. We all know that without a leader, the Greenskins are nothing of a threat, and I think that there lies our last hope. I will personally confront their warlord, and only then will the battle be decided. But, sire, it's just a desperate plan. It would be rather..." "That was an order, Kurt. You have no time to waste."
Recognizing the unflinching decision in the Emperor's eyes, Kurt Hellborg gave in. He knew that there was nothing he could say to make the Emperor change his mind. He also realized that the chances were that they would never meet again in this life. But he was a soldier, one of the best, and as a soldier, he reacted. The old veteran stood to attention and answered,
"Yes, sire, may Sigmar fight by your side."
Then he left. Karl Franz mounted his black warhorse and addressed the master of the Engineers Guild. "Tell your men to concentrate their last rounds against the giant, and to abandon the guns when they run out of shots. There will be enough deaths today." Then he reached the standard of the Reichsguard, and under its inspiring colours he spoke to the knights.
"Men, I'm going to lead you into a desperate charge. I won't lie to you. There are not enough of us to prevail against that immense horde of Boar Riders. We do, however, have a chance. You have all experienced that orc armies dissolve like snow in the sun if their leader is killed. And this is our last hope of winning the battle. I want to confront their chieftain, and I need your help to reach him through his army. This is a sacrifice that I don't want to impose on any of you. Anybody who wants to leave with Kurt is free to do so. Your Reichsmarschall will need protection on the way to Altdorf. The ones who decide to stay must know that they are probably choosing death. But they must also know that if we succeed, we will spend the rest of our life knowing that we have saved thousands of innocent lives. We will know that we were ready for the extreme sacrifice in the name of the Empire. If we die, we will die wielding our swords, and there is no better death for a warrior. We will all sit at Sigmar's banquet like the heroes of old, and our names will be remembered in the songs of our people till the end of time. In any case, we will become stuff legends are made of. That, I can promise you. So, who is with me?"
A murmur rose through the knights, and the banner bearer answered to the Emperor.
"My lord, I am sure that I speak for all of us. We will all be with you, up to the end. We have trained all our lives for this moment. We all swore to die protecting you, and the tradition of the guard will not be stained by any of us walking away from danger and abandoning you. Reichsguard knights, your emperor is calling!"
500 swords were unsheathed and held high. With a single word, the knights renewed their oath of loyalty.
"Sigmar!"
Filled with pride, the Emperor turned his steed towards the green horde below, and, raising the holy hammer of the Empire's patron god, he shouted,
"Ride with me, men of the Empire! Charge!"
The Empire line was in tatters. Only the right flank conserved some of its former order. Of the men's centre, a mere two regiments were left. The largest was a group of demented flagellants, too worried about the end of the world to run for their lives. Not far from them were the great swords of Averland, holding their ground in a desperate square to protect Marius Lightdorf, Elector Count of Averland. The two groups of men looked like small islands in a sea of green, but their sacrifice was slowing down the enemy advance. giving time for the right flank to reorganize. Suddenly, the boar riders were on them. The orc warlord drove his gigantic mount through the tall men in heavy armor, tossing them aside like broken dolls, and made his way to the count himself. Marius Lightduff came forward to meet the monster, and dodging the charging beast, he swung his runefang in a deadly arc. The massive boar was disemboweled by the magic sword, and its rider fell to the ground. For an instant, the orcs hesitated, but immediately the warlord was on his feet again and leapt towards the Elector Count. The ensuing duel was over in a few seconds. The creature parried the runefang with his battle axe and let the count stab him with the long poignard he was wielding in his left hand. The blade buried itself in the thick skin and muscles of the creature, which ignored the wound altogether and grasped the neck of the count in its powerful left claw. After a few seconds of struggle, the man's strangled snarl was cut short by the chilling noise of bones snapping, and the body of Marius Lightduff relaxed in the grip of the orc, lifeless. The orc warlord turned around to contemplate his victory. The Umis were defeated. The pitiful remains of their army would soon be crushed. There they were, still fighting off his boys, but the sight of their boss dead at his hands should now break their spirit, he thought. Unexpectedly, the Umi line rang with cries of hope and a new energy seemed to fill them. All eyes were looking west. The warlord could not understand what was happening, but then he perceived a tremor on the ground and heard a blast of an horn mixed with the screams of panic from the gobbos behind his boar boys. Eventually, he caught sight of the enemy knights as they charged through his troops, running down the gobbos as they fled and then crashing into the boar boys. At first, the Umis seemed to prevail, their charge penetrating deep within the mob of boar riders, slaying dozens of their ferocious warriors. But the boys were too many, and no matter how many were killed in those few moments, the Umis' charge eventually exhausted its impetus. The Umi knights rallied around their banner, their lances broken, their steeds wounded and spent. At that point, the orc warlord saw their leader and realised that the one he had killed was not the boss of the Umis. The orc recognised the weapon that the enemy leader was wielding with such an implacable power. Skull Splitter. That warhammer had been the bane of his race since the dawn of times, according to the shaman's tales. If the mounted Umi boss had the hammer, he must be the warlord of all men, the one they called Emperor. The orc was filled with pride. He would kill that emperor and take his hammer. All the Umis would then surrender to him, and more orcs would join his war. After that, he would butcher the bearded Stantes, and he would become the greatest warlord to ever walk under Gork's sky. The emperor of the Umis had seen him too, and started to move towards him, smashing his way through the boar riders. The warlord could not wait for that fight, and ordered his bodyguard of a huge mounted bosses to stop the other knights, but to let the big Umi with the hammer come to him. His bodyguards, who had almost finished crashing the last greatswords, grunted affirmatively and charged in. Carl Franz spurred his horse towards the orc warlord. His arm was tired. He couldn't remember how many boar riders he had dispatched with the mighty hammer, and now he could see that one more mob of them was coming towards him and his Reichsguard. These ones were impressive creatures, even bigger than normal boar riders and better armed and armoured. There were more of them than he had knights left. The situation was grim. Well, he would make sure that they paid a high price for his life. "Sigmar and the Empire!" he shouted, closing his visor and spurring his charger towards the incoming orcs. The knights and the orc bodyguard clashed in a thundering clamour of steel against steel. But something strange happened around Carl Franz. The boar riders opened up in front of him and let him through, concentrating their attacks on the Reichsguard. The Emperor stopped his horse and was about to turn it, but then he saw the orc warlord standing straight ahead in front of him on the body of Marius Lightduff. The monster raised its axe in a clear challenge directed at him. The Emperor understood, rode towards the warlord and then dismounted, readying himself for the final confrontation. The two opponents studied each other for a few seconds, Then, all around them, the battle seemed to stop. An unnatural silence fell on the battlefield. All eyes turned towards the two champions. Everybody, orc and man, knew that this was the final moment when the battle would be decided. The two opponents were magnificent warriors, each of them representing the epitome of their race's fighting prowess. The Emperor was a tall, muscular man, clad in his black full armor. He had removed his helm, knowing the importance of eye contact in single combat. On his chest, the silver seal was shining like a star, and the runes inscribed on Galmaraz, the mighty hammer of Sigmar, were burning bright. His opponent was towering over him, a mountain of green muscle. The steam of its breath made Carl Franz think of a savage beast ready to charge. The bits of armor strapped onto that immense body seemed more like a decoration than real protection for its rock-hard flesh. The heavy axe in its hands was as tall as a man. Carl Franz noticed crackling green energies playing around the edges of its blade and realized that he would not have to deal only with muscular power. Detecting that the attention of the Emperor focused for an instant on the axe, the vicious orc seized the occasion and sprang towards the man. It moved at a speed unthinkable for such a huge creature, and its bellowing battle cry was in itself an assault on the man's fighting spirit. The instincts, developed in years of training in the best fencing schools, and the experience built on dozens of battlefields, saved the Emperor. His shield arm rose, just in time to stop the axe swinging towards his neck. The impact was terrible. The axe cut right through the shield bearing the insignia of the Emperor, destroying it. But the blade was stopped by the Emperor's armor, the silver seal countering the energies that would have allowed that fearsome axe to sever his arm. Carl Franz ignored the pain and struck back with Galmaraz. The hammer hit the orc on the shoulder, and the savage warrior screamed its pain to the sky. That gave the Emperor the time to recover and regain the distance he wanted to keep from his opponent. He didn't want the orc to get too close. He knew that if the monster grabbed him, that would spell his doom. The wound seemed to eliminate any trace of rational thought from the orc. It reverted to its most basic instincts and charged in with even stronger ferocity. The series of blows that followed were parried, dodged, and returned by the two opponents in a duel that often got too fast for the troops around to clearly follow. After a few long minutes, it became clear to Carl Franz that he was slowly losing. His body felt numb where some of the orc blows had reached him. He could feel his own blood flowing in the leggings of his armor. His strength was waning, while this monstrous opponent kept attacking relentlessly. Finally, the Emperor began giving ground and eventually fell on one knee. At that sight, a cry of pain came from the Empire troops. The Orc Warlord, foretasting victory, prepared for the last strike. Carl Franz was overwhelmed by pain. He understood that he was losing the duel because his race had lost that bloodlust, that same savage spirit that filled his opponent with strength. Civilization had brought many advantages on mankind, but men nowadays relied more and more on black powder and other technological means to fight for them, and the warrior spirit of their barbaric ancestors was not as strong as it used to be. If only he could have the same strength as Holy Sigmar of old, who vanquished this very same enemy millennia ago in this same mountain pass. If only he could regain that spirit to save his subjects and protect his land. His silent prayer was sincere and was not ignored. Carl Franz did not know where the new energy came from. Was it from the hammer he was holding in his hand, or was it from within the recesses of his own soul? He could not tell. All of a sudden, the pain was gone. His muscles flexed with unearthly strength, and a primal fighting spirit filled his heart. The Emperor rose once more to meet the orc. The warlord stopped. He could not believe what he was seeing. He had been fighting a man in armor, so why was the figure standing before him that of a gigantic warrior dressed in furs? This was not the same person. This was taller, more powerful, but the hammer he raised in the air was the very same legendary weapon. The man shouted a loud battle cry that boomed among the mountains as it had done so many centuries before. Umbagan! At that sound, the instincts of the warlord were overcome by memories inscribed in the soul of his race. Memories of mighty barbarians defeating the orcs in the war for the domination of the rich plains, driving them to the desolation beyond the mountains. In those times, men were led by this very same champion, he who had denied the possession of this land to the green-skinned race. If the orc warlord could have known such an emotion, this would have been the moment he would have felt fear. Instead, his reaction was rather one of hesitation, a split second of hesitation that was to cost him everything. Gal Miraz struck home on the orc's forehead with a thundering crack. The green giant fell, life quickly abandoning his crushed skull. The orc stared through his own blood at the enemy that had vanquished him. Once again, he was seeing the wounded man in the black armor, and not the godlike barbarian warrior. The orc could not understand the power that defeated him, and raised a claw in a last attempt to fight back, but all his strength had gone and his arm fell back, powerless. Then he saw no more. The battle was over. Their leader defeated, the orcs scattered and kept fleeing until they were back in their bleak territories. The men, too tired to pursue, took care of their wounded, starting with their glorious emperor. From that day on, the name of Karl Franz has been pronounced in the empire with even greater pride, for all heard tales of that duel. And even though in years to come, the stories about the battle were embellished and exaggerated, everybody always agreed that on that day, Sigmar himself had fought alongside his warriors. Thanks for watching, everybody. I'm sure many of you miss fantasy as much as I do. To everybody supporting the channel, thank you so much. It really means a lot that so many of you are. And if you'd like to join them, please consider using the links below. No obligation, though. But for those of you who are, thank you. Thank you very much. Please like this video, subscribe if you're not subscribed. Let me know in the comments below what you thought of it. And if you want to share this somewhere, that I'd really appreciate that. That really helps spread the word about the channel. Okay, I will see you next time. Thanks for watching. Cheers.